I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You don't think that it's time that somebody cared enough to have a dream?
Why are you getting so upset? This is not about you.
Yes, it is. You are a human affront to all women, and I am a woman.
At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you are. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
How do you go about getting an exorcism?
I beg your pardon?
Hi, this is Mark Kermode. Thanks for downloading this Kermode on Film podcast. Once again, because it's the festive season, we're going through the best and worst films of the year with me and Jack Howard.
Hello.
Jack, how
are
you doing?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
We should say for people, we did all four of these in one batch. It's not like we went away and came back, so we've literally just finished the... If you've listened to in the first two, we did... Not because we're doing top 10, but it's five each. So we did number five to number three, half to half of number three of our best, and then five to number three, half of our worst. And we kind of fell out about Last Night in Soho, but we're all good. We're all okay.
Yeah, we've had a cuddle in between podcasts.
Mummy and Daddy still love each other.
They
just want to live apart.
They're just sick of each other.
It's like that thing in the Peter Sellers biopic in which the character played by Jeffrey Rush says to the child, it's not that Daddy doesn't love you, it's just that Daddy loves Britt Eklund more. So worth getting to. Anyway, okay, so we are halfway through our top 10, but obviously five, because there's two of us, two fives of 10, of our best and worst films of the year. This is the best that we're going to be doing now, so number three to number one. We ended with me choosing Green Knight as my number three. Jack, what is your number three best film released in the UK in 2021?
Don't Look Up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, go on.
And you know what?
Like, I'm surprised.
I'm such a massive fan of Adam McKay.
Uh-huh.
I think...
Is he McKay or Mackay?
I would say McKay.
Okay, fine, good.
Yeah. When The Big Short came out,
yeah.
I think, and this is me being very honest, I think I was a bit too young to really get on board with some of the complexities about what it was talking about.
Okay.
Like, I don't think I could fully follow yet the crash. I don't think I could follow it. I don't think it made sense to me. Even when he had Margot Robbie in a bathtub. Put it on mute. But as I've gotten older and I've had a sort of rewatch of it, I've got a newfound sort of appreciation for it, and I now feel like I understand it a lot more. I don't think I completely get it, nor do I think most people do, to be honest. But I think it's brilliant. I think he's brilliant. I love his kinetic way of editing films as well as the way that he moves the camera. And obviously he was the person who spearheaded the way that Succession is made. He directed the pilot for Succession, so it's got a very similar, almost faux documentary kind of style to things, where it makes you really believe that these things are happening in front of you. And then I really loved Vice. I really think that Vice is fantastic, and I find it a very easily rewatchable film. I find it a very funny film. I think Christian Bale and Amy Adams are outstanding in it. I love his weird editing choices in that, where he will in the scene where Dick Cheney is talking to George Bush and he's asking him to be his vice president, he does almost this flash forward of Dick Cheney laughing while he knows that he's caught this guy and he's got exactly what he wants. And he's just these very interesting things like that. And the joke in that movie where it ends halfway through, it gives fake on-screen titles about what they went on to do, breed Labradors, and then the credits start coming up and it really leans into it for a long time, a belly laugh joke to me. So I was really, really excited for Don't Look Up, because Leo DiCaprio in a comedy like this, Jennifer Lawrence's return to cinema as well after a few years of not being in things. And then I saw the Rotten Tomatoes score, and I don't obviously treat that as the word of gospel, but I saw that it was bang half-half, it was splitting opinion. And that firstly made me go, ooh, wasn't expecting that, but then it made me even more excited because I was oh, it's strongly dividing opinion.
Can I just give you one piece of advice?
Please.
stop going on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Just stop going on Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah. Because Rotten Tomatoes is the work of the devil.
Go on.
Well, it's just rubbish. All review aggregators are rubbish. Mm. Okay? Basically, okay, if you have a Rotten Tomatoes thing, if some people think a film is brilliant, some people think a film is terrible, the Rotten Tomatoes score is, it's all right.
Yeah, yeah. And I actually think as well that that's why something like, so I wasn't a big fan of Shang-Chi, the Marvel film that came out earlier this year.
I liked it.
I wasn't a big fan of it. But like that's got like a 90-something on Rotten Tomatoes, and it's because most people are going, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that makes it feel like, oh, it's got a 90-whatever on Tomatoes. Oh, my God. But it's like most people going, yeah, 3 stars.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I saw that this was like dividing people, and that made me more excited because I was like, well, I'm either going to love this or I'm going to hate it. And I loved every second of it. Okay. I thought it was a pitch-perfect parody of what we're going through at the moment, not only with COVID, obviously, and also to do with climate change.
And, of course, the COVID stuff is preemptive because they started shooting. Mm-hmm. It was January of the thing. So all the script writing...
It's all about climate change.
All about climate change. And then suddenly when, for the central thing is, these two low-level astronomers discover that an asteroid or meteor, I never tell which is what, is on course to destroy the Earth.
100%.
100%. Is well, it 199.7? Oh, there we go.
We'll say 70.
Say 70. Round it down to 60. They go to the
Sit tight and assess.
They go to the White House where Meryl Streep as a female version of Trump is there. And all she...
Which is, first of all, a genius thing. We were talking about this recently at the pub. Where I was like,
God, do you remember going to the pub?
I was like, it's amazing that he's gone. I want, like, clearly Adam McKay is a very political human being and like really wanted to express something about how he feels about Donald Trump. But nobody wants to watch 2.5 hours of Donald Trump on screen. Like, ugh, no. Who do you want to watch?
Meryl Streep.
Like, of course, like, make her the president. And like, why not, like, just completely gender flip it and just be like, yeah, that's what we're doing, but we're making it her instead of that troll. Like, we're going to make it this compelling actress that you... I mean, she really eats it up as well. Like, she loves that every second of it.
She's very, very good. And of course, I mean, one of the reasons I like it... I mean, it's not in my top five by any means, but one of the reasons I like it is... I think the central conceit of the phrase don't look up.
Oh, yeah.
The idea of politicising the act of looking up.
Yeah.
Because, you know, particularly with everything that's happened with COVID and what we now have just discovered fairly recently as we're recording this, about the fact that Trump's administration deliberately hindered the, you know, the fight against COVID. It deliberately fouled up the figures. We now finally have the official verdict on this, and it is, yes, they're monsters. They are absolute monsters. But the politicisation of masks and the politicisation of vaccines, so like in America, for example, if you're a Democrat, you are massively more likely to be vaccinated than if you're a Republican. And Republican senators are, meanwhile, going around tweeting people saying, yeah, take your masks off, you know, it's all rubbish. It's all, you know, we can't listen to the science. We can't listen to the figures. And that then becomes don't look up. Don't look up where you can actually see that a meteor is actually coming towards the Earth. No, don't look up. Look straight ahead.
Yep.
Look straight ahead because it's the liberal elite who are trying to tell you to look up, and I thought that was that worked surprisingly well, particularly since it was never about that. It was about climate change.
And isn't it amazing how it kind of just accidentally, you know, became that? And and it's such a perfect...
Also, very good to see a film in which Timothée Chalamet plays an irritating young boy.
But I also like it in a meta way that, like, you know, if the world were ending and Timothée Chalamet came along, I'm sure that, I'll shack up with Timothée Chalamet. Like, that seems to be what happens. Like, Jennifer Lawrence, who's clearly, like, 10 years or something older than Timothée Chalamet, is like, yeah, I'll shack up with Timothée Chalamet. Like, that's kind of what happens, and I really, really like that. It's just like, yeah, I'll take a chance on this.
And Cate Blanchett doing every Fox News journalist ever.
She's so funny, you know. She's so good. And just how, like, superficial all of it is, and, like, how... You know, the criticism of the way that women are treated in the media, the fact that, like, I mean, the amazing line of, like, oh, the handsome astronomer who can come back anytime. The yelling lady? Not so much. And then, like, the fact that he, Leonardo DiCaprio's character, starts leaning into this role that he's playing within the media because it's getting him attention and because it's getting him success in whatever way, and he's benefiting from the end of the world.
Yeah.
Seeing that happen was also really interesting and you know, dark and kind of like a criticism of capitalism as well as, like, you know, it's, I think some of the criticism that's come at it is like, pick a lane, and some people, I was like, no, he's criticizing the world, like the way that the world is right now. Well, also, and I think he's doing that very well.
And also, is it funny? And the answer is, it is funny. That's the point. You can do what you want if it's funny.
And it is consistently the entire way through. Jonah Hill, oh my God, the moment when he says, yeah, you can come down to the bunker now or whatever it is, like the meeting that we're having, and Leonardo DiCaprio comes out and Jennifer Lawrence is like, oh, what, so we're just supposed to stay here? And he goes, oh, do you want to come? And she goes, yeah. And he just closes the door. It's so good. I can't wait to watch it again. It is, like, it's obviously not going to be for everyone because the humour in it is based in, like, really dark, horrible behaviours about human beings. And if you don't like that reflection, if you don't like looking into that mirror and seeing that reflected back at you, you're not going to like it. And that's fine. But I think it's right up my street, and I think it was pitch perfect. I also thought it breezed by. Didn't feel like 2.5 hours.
No. I mean, I watched it on a screener link, and I didn't look at my phone once, which is...
Good sign.
Yeah, it is a good sign. It is a good sign.
Your breathing is stressing me out.
This will affect the entire planet.
I know, but it's, like, so stressful.
Can I get that one more ice water?
I'll get 2 more glasses of white wine, and I don't need the judgy face.
There's a comet headed directly towards Earth.
Do you know how many the world is ending meetings we've had over the last 2 years?
Drought, famine.
Hole in the ozone is so boring.
Number two in my favorite films of the year is Summer of Soul, which when we talked about this before, when we did our kind of midterm report, I loved Summer of Soul. I just thought, I mean, the most amazing thing about it is it's this rediscovery of this festival footage from the Harlem Cultural Festival from 1969 that I knew nothing about. And apparently a bunch of other people knew nothing about. And in a year when you think that the big cultural, pop cultural moment movies are Gimme Shelter and Woodstock. Mm. And then you watch this and it's like, wow, this is... It's astonishing. It's Mahalia Jackson and it's Stevie Wonder and it's Sly and the Family Stone and it's just every act on fire. And it's a big cultural phenomenon. And how did I not know about this? How is it that I'm interested in rock documentaries, I knew nothing about this until Questlove Thompson came along, refound the footage. And one of the lovely things about it is he's found people who were there at the festival. And he begins and ends with somebody who was there when they were very young going, yeah, I mean, I have a memory of it. But then he starts showing them the footage and it ends up with that same person in tears going, I thought I'd imagined it. I literally thought I'd imagined it. And what you've done is you've shown me. Honestly, I think it's the best concert movie I've ever seen. Mm. And I've seen a lot of concert movies.
How many times have you watched it this year?
4.
Has it become like a bit of a comfort thing?
Yeah, because it's not just that it's comfort, it is comfort, but also it's so proud. The music is dynamite. The music is just like, it's so funky and it's so spiritual and it's so adventurous and so on. But you're just watching it going, where has this been?
It's almost a crime that it's been hidden for so long.
And it's just so fantastic. I cannot recommend it highly enough. I could just bang it on at any time and it's just wonderful. So that's my number two.
As soon as you move down, we can start. Welcome to the Harlem Culture Festival. Here in the heart of Harlem.
What time is it?
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Your number two?
Spencer.
Very good. And again, soundtrack is very important because Johnny Greenwood's score, dynamite.
Yeah, so
absolute
good.
Absolute dynamite.
Speaking of, we were saying that Dev Patel has never given a bad performance. Johnny Greenwood, every single time he does a soundtrack, I get massively interested.
But Spencer is really interesting.
Yes, it is.
Johnny Greenwood describes it as being... He said what he did was he took a classical... You know, a classical arrangement, a classical orchestra, and then one by one replaced them with free jazz musicians playing the same instrument.
Right.
So you get that kind of idea about a Regency structure falling into something much more freeform and much more chaotic. And actually, sorry, at the risk of... let me read you something, because I do a music show on Scala Radio, and this was my second favourite film score of the year. And I wrote a note to Johnny Greenwood, who I've kind of had some dealings with, and said, look, could you just say a few words about the score? It's all right, Jack. Can I just read you
Please
this?
Please do. Yeah, I'm so excited to hear this.
About what he said. So hang on. I'm literally just going into my... This is how slow I am. He's got a weird... He's JG. He is, isn't he? He's like... Oh, J... Hang on. Johnny Greenwood. There we go. Fine. Okay, so here is what he said about the score. Blah, 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 blah.
He said that?
He said blah, 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 blah. Oh, no, he emailed it to me, didn't he? Did he email it? Hang on. We'll leave all this in, Nick. It's absolute comedy gold. Right. Hang on. Oh, maybe he texted it to me. Hang on.
Right.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Sorry, Nick, you will have to trim this, but let me go. Hang on. Right, here we go. So this is what's fine. So anyway, I messaged Johnny, said, this is what Johnny Greenwood said about the score. He said, the music started from the determination of having some free-form jazz as part of the score. Traditionally, these kinds of films are done with Purcell and Handel-style music, royal music, in other words. But then I realised that nothing has changed much instrumentally in the intervening 300 years. Trumpets, drums, double basses, keyboards are all essentially the same, as are a lot of the chord sequences. So I just wrote some Baroque themes for a small orchestra, and then had the jazz players replace the orchestra players one at a time until it morphed from one world into another.
Wow.
Diana is a free spirit in this film, or trying to be, and that's what the score is attempting to describe. And that, my friends, is a fucking great score.
Yeah, fuck me. Like, that's somebody who's like, it's nice to hear somebody speaking about their role in a film purely serving what it is at the core.
Purely serving the drama.
Yeah, completely.
Exactly.
And like adding to that, like completely. Like, for what I'll say about it is that, I mean, I loved Jackie, his previous film. And I mean, it's quite funny that
Pablo Larraín, who's the director.
Yeah, he's getting a little bit of a reputation for making beautiful films about sad women.
Hey, it's a big genre.
Yeah. But like, quite quickly from when it opened, I found myself being very overwhelmed by how beautiful it was. I was just like, this, the cinematography in this is stunning. And it is, I mean, I think I remember hearing your review on the radio where you were saying that like it opens and there's like army trucks and stuff going by, and you're like, what movie is this?
Right, you think you're in the wrong film.
Yeah, like it opens, actually I think the opening shot is from inside the fridge in a kitchen, and you can just make out that there's a sign that says be quiet, or like keep quiet, they can hear you.
Exactly, yeah.
And I think they can hear you. That to me felt like it was the crux of what was, like, you know, it was the thing that was threaded through the entire film, because I think Kristen Stewart is amazing. I know you've been a huge fan of hers ever since the Twilight days, and probably before. Obviously.
Well, Panic Room.
Contact. And she isn't and is doing almost like... It's almost like she's doing what your memory of Diana is when you first meet her. It's almost a little bit disarming to sort of see her be Diana. And then quite quickly, I start to realise that everything she's saying sounds like it's a secret. Like, everything. She's doing everything at this kind of level. Like, she's almost like worried that somebody is going to overhear her. And that sign, "Be quiet, they can hear you," just kept coming back into my mind, even if they were, I think they cut to it a couple of times.
It's there, but
even when they didn't do that, it felt like it was the case. And, you know, they do things like they sew her curtains up, like all these things that are,
Princess in the Tower. Absolutely, yeah. And it's described as a fable from a true tragedy, which is a beautiful phrase, way of describing it. And Jack, do you know what the film isn't about? Family.
I didn't see it coming.
Sorry.
I didn't see it coming. But yeah, I think she's astounding. I think she should win every award going for it. She's brilliant. And the filmmaking is incredible. I love that it kind of turns into this like strange, surreal horror where she's seeing the vision of Anne Boleyn, and it's got this kind of dramatic irony to all of it, because there's this constant chatter in the film about how she feels like she's running out of time.
Yeah.
And it's like, we know that this is what's happening.
Yeah.
But it's kind of as if Diana in the film knows that that's the case as well. I just thought it was fab. I thought it was really, really brilliant.
Ma'am? They're waiting for you. Everything. They don't.
It's in my top 10. Not in the five, but it's in my top 10. So, number one spot. My favourite film of the year
is
Petite Maman.
Oh, I still haven't seen it.
She's Céline Sciamma, who
I really
want
to see it.
I love that
it's only 88 minutes long.
It's 73 minutes.
Is it 73
long?
Minutes 73. Long. Oh, I apologise.
No, it's 73. It is a U certificate film. That means anyone can watch it. And the best, I mean, I'll keep it brief because I've talked about this a lot, but it's basically a fairy tale or a modern fable about two young girls who meet in the wood, who look very similar, played by twins, who have a kind of magical connection. And the film starts with one of the young girls losing her grandmother and her mother being distressed about it and the child being distressed about it. And the film is then broadly about, wouldn't it be magical if you could meet your parents when they were still children?
Mm-hmm.
And as with all of Céline Sciamma's work, I mean, she made Girlhood, she made Portrait of a Lady on Fire. You just go, when I reviewed the film, I remember, you write your first draft of the thing, the review, and I just wrote, perfect. I almost have nothing to say about it other than...
It's difficult sometimes, isn't it, to talk about something you love so much when you'd like... A lot of the time you're like picking up on... But you're just like, I was just... It's actually a bigger compliment to have less to say because you're like, the magic trick worked.
Yes, exactly. And again, the magic trick worked. I mean, it's like, you can talk for 20 minutes about why you didn't get on with Last Night in Soho, but I can literally give you one word on why I love Petite Maman, and it is... Perfect. And I would say, everybody, go and see it.
J'ai un secret. Je suis ton enfant. Tu viens du futur. Tu seras d'accord pour que je dorme chez elle?
Quand?
Je sais pas, elle m'a pas encore invité.
Thank you.
mal qu'on se soit rencontré.
So, my number one is Tick, Tick, Boom.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay, controversial choice.
Yes.
You're a big Adam Garfield fan.
Andrew.
You're a big Andrew Garfield fan.
I absolutely adore Andrew Garfield. I just think he's the best. And also just seeing him in interviews recently for Tick, Tick, Boom has just made me fall in love with him even deeper because he just seems like such a great person. But anyway, like, Tick, Tick, Boom, I didn't have much expectations for, and I also know that it's like it is a controversial choice for favourite film of the year, but it is my favourite film of the year.
Yeah, it's great.
It's a story about Jonathan Larson, who created Rent, but it's about his him when he was 29 years old, before he was a success, and the story is leading up to his 30th birthday and him feeling like he's running out of time and that he needs to have done something significant. Otherwise, he will never be able to do it. And that Sondheim had done, you know, stuff before him, and all these like greats that have managed to do it before him, and he is running out of time. And it's actually an adaptation of his second musical, and the film cleverly mixes between a performance of the musical Tick, Tick, Boom, whilst also showing you a representation of what inspired that musical and weaving in the songs back and forth between him performing them on stage and also between the reality of what was happening that inspired the songs.
Yes, the first one being a musical that he wrote, which was a dystopian futuristic science fiction fantasy that he couldn't get off the ground. Yep. So he ended up making a musical about how he couldn't get the dystopian futuristic science fiction fantasy off the ground.
Yes, yes. And the songs even that they perform from that musical in, which that was brilliantly done, by the way. But like the songs they perform in the film about from that musical, I was like, if that was the opening of a musical I was watching in the West End, I'd be like, this is going to be fucking brilliant. Like that, it feels very Book of Mormon. Actually, some of the dynamics of the song in it, okay. It feels like it's almost a parody of musical theatre in some ways. But the reason why it really spoke to me is because I am also a creative man, age of 29. Who is turning 30.
Are you having midlife crisis?
No, I don't think I'm having a midlife crisis, but I certainly watched it and felt like, oh, this is about me. Like, not that I feel particularly similar, that like I need to do something by 30 or else I won't have made it, because I feel pretty satisfied right now with how things are kind of going. But certainly spiritually, I was like, oh, this is about my time, and it's like for me right now. So it just kind of found me at this point. You know, the same as Bo Burnham's Inside. Like, it had a very similar effect. Of just like, oh, this is...
Incidentally, I watched that again, and I think you're more right than I was.
Oh, good. Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad that
we'll come back to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so a bit of that, like feeling very, very just taken by it. Also loving the songs, especially 3090, which is the opening number, and then the therapy song, which I can also relate to as well, about the sort of modern romance of like how they're communicating. I feel bad that you feel bad about me feeling bad about you feeling bad about what I said about what you said about what you did about what you... And all that is like, yeah, I can see that.
Should just say for our listeners, both of us are in therapy.
Yes, we are.
So, hey, and
both, it's a great thing.
Yeah, both proud of it.
Yes,
both absolutely
very
proud.
Much so.
I started as CBT, but I'm now having full-on Freudian, mm-hmm. you know, digging around stuff.
Going back to childhood
stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so just...
Everything's our parents' fault.
No. It's absolutely not.
I'm joking. That's just a joke.
Okay, fine.
About
okay,
therapy.
Okay. Do you know the definition of Freudian? It's when you say one thing but mean your mother. Yeah, anyway, sorry, finish your Tick, Tick, Boom.
So, there's that. I love the songs. And then also, just on another level, that it is about a character who believes he was running out of time, and he was. That is such a tragic story to tell. And it's also woven in with the AIDS epidemic that was happening at the time, with a character who... his best friend, who he believes that he and his and his people like him and his friends are also running out of time, but actually the whole time Jonathan Larson was the person who ended up. It's a tragic story, but there's something about that
again,
really sticks
with me. That chimes as well with Spencer, because as you said, the thing with Spencer is that you feel like the time is running out, but we know that in retrospect, but they don't know it at the time.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that's a really interesting choice. So just to run down our top five again. At number five, my five was Titan. Yours was...
Come On, Come On.
My number four was Another Round. Yours was...
King Richard.
My number three was The Green Knight. Yours was...
Don't Look Up.
And my number two, Summer of Soul. Your number two?
Spencer.
My number one, Petite Maman. Your number one.
Tick, tick, boom.
And what's interesting is no crossover between the titles.
Yeah.
But I like all your choices.
Thank you, man. Yeah, I also want to see the ones on yours that I haven't seen.
Yeah.
And if I may,
yes,
just because I know I don't want to run over, I also just want to, about Tick, Tick, Boom, one last thing I wanted to say was about the reason why I was so taken with it overall was because I thought Lin-Manuel Miranda, who obviously is known for Hamilton
for
and everything. Yeah. This is his directional debut, and I would love to see more of him directing. Because
can I just say, I think there's no chance that you're not going to see more of him directing.
Because he really, this is where I feel like I've been most impressed by him as, you know, in his ever expanding skill set. But this is where I've been most impressed by him. I thought opening it with VCR looking footage that was fake but felt very real was such a brilliant way of getting us into the fact that this was a true story about, you know, real stuff that could have been happening, and intertwining that with more cinematic stuff, just things like that, and the way that he manages to make the musicals feel like they could really be happening because they are just a bunch of theatre kids. And, you know, that the Bohemia one in the apartment feels like it just happens in a very natural way. And I love that they have this like jock kind of character that goes, "This was amazing!" Like, he's just like impressed by them. Yeah, I couldn't speak higher of it.
Lately, I've been hearing this sound like a tick, 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 like a time bomb.
Check.
Hey, boy genius.
The fuse has been lit. The clock counts down the seconds.
It sounds great.
Do you know how many Jonathan Larsons there are? One.
The flame gets closer and closer and closer until all at once everything explodes.
What was really surprising was that last week I saw a film that Lin-Manuel Miranda wasn't involved in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't think those existed anymore.
No, they did. Anyway, Jack, okay, fabulous. So the next podcast is going to be our number three to number one of our least favourite films of the year. I hope we're going to find more accord in that. Thanks for listening to this. I hope you're all staying safe and keeping well. And, you know, do the usual stuff. Check out the Patreon page. Subscribe. Tell your friends. Stay safe, everyone. Tune in for the next podcast.
Bye.